There are few things we take more for granted than the words and phrases we use on a regular basis until someone swears that it's something different. There are fascinating variations of American regional English, and it's always a lot of fun when Joan Hall comes by. She is the chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English. And Joan, wonderful to have you with us again.
Thank you. It's always fun.
Oh, it's always a great fun. And for our listeners, is there a word or phrase you've always wondered about its origin? You know of a phrase that has a word summer in it? We're going to talk about words with summer in it a little bit too today. Maybe you love words and wordplay. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. We'd certainly love to hear from you. For those who aren't familiar with DARE, I think most of our listeners probably are, but how did the Dictionary of American Regional English project get started?
Well, it got started more than 50 years ago.
Yeah.
The American Dialect Society knew that this country was large and varied, and after a lot of preparatory work, Fred Cassidy was appointed editor in the early 60s. And between 1965 and 70, he sent 80 field workers to 1,002 communities and mapped the responses in answer to a huge questionnaire.
Yeah, and he had some good people out there. I don't know how they picked them, the people to do the interviewing, but they got a wealth of information. My goodness.
Oh, they did, yes.
It's amazing. How's the dictionary organized?
It's alphabetical, like any dictionary, but for every entry that we found to be geographically regional, we have a regional label. So, for instance, brat, which was totally new to me when I came to Wisconsin, and I thought it was brat, we'll have a label that says, especially Wisconsin. So it's alphabetical, but with regional labels throughout.
Mm-hmm. And how many entries do we have?
More than 60,000.
That is amazing. And I think what's really cool is that you are now updating the research as well. What's going on?
Yes. For us, the summer of 2014 is very important, and there's only one more month that people here in Wisconsin can participate in a new survey. We all know that language changes, and the original research is 50 years old now. So we'd like to find out what has happened to American English. So we're using Wisconsin as a pilot study, just as Fred Cassidy did more than 50 years ago before DARE. And what we're doing is going to the original 22 communities in the state and some new ones as well. And we're asking most of the same questions that were in the original survey, plus new ones for things that didn't even exist then. But the difference is that we're not sending field workers out. Instead, this is an online survey. We're working with the UW Survey Center, and people can go to the DARE website, www.dare.wisc.edu, and click on the link on the left-hand side of the page to go to the survey. And so we're hoping to find out what has happened to Wisconsin English over the last 50 years.
Wow, you think about all of the change that's taken place in 50 years. There's bound to be a lot of change in the language as well, isn't there?
Oh, there certainly is. There is this perception that American English has become homogenized. I don't believe that's true because language doesn't change at the same rates or in the same ways in every place. But there will be differences, and those are what we're trying to find out.
And when in the survey itself, just as a kind of a, maybe give us an example of the kind of question a person would be asked to answer.
Well, there are 41 different topics from time, weather, food, clothing, farming, plants and animals, school, religion, disease, health, all the kinds of things that we find in our lives. And people can choose which topics they'd like to answer.
You don't have to answer all of them.
No, nope, they don't. And that's a good thing because there are 1,722 questions.
Oh, my goodness. No, we won't. Yeah, you probably aren't going to find too many people. I'd be interested if you ever find anybody who does all of them. But
yeah, I think I would be surprised in this online survey. When the original survey was done, there were quite a few people who did the whole thing. But they were doing it face-to-face, and they became friends with the field worker.
Well,
so
sure.
It was a very comfortable relationship.
Joan Hall, our guest today, chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English. You can join us with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call or email us at talk@wpr.org, or even post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We would certainly love to hear from you. I thought it'd be fun to talk about some phrases that have the word summer in it, since here we are in the August already, so well into summer. And there are a few that deal with food and cooking. One, a summer kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, where do we find that used?
That's chiefly in the northern states, except in the Northwest. It doesn't seem to be used there. But a summer kitchen was just a small outbuilding away from the house where you could do the cooking and not get the rest of the house all heated up.
Oh, okay. And then summer salmon?
Summer salmon is another name for the rainbow trout.
Oh, I didn't know that. I did not know. I've never heard that here in Wisconsin.
Well, I don't know whether that was regional or not. It may not be. It could be scattered around. But there are lots of names for trout, and that's one of them.
And there are a couple that deal with health. Summer sores.
Mm-hmm.
Which are what? There be like sunburn, or would they be?
More like skin eruptions, maybe impetigo. If children get into, in the South, they'd call it maybe dew poison. They think that if you go out in the dewy grass in the morning, you can get skin sores. Others call it ground itch. But summer sores is just a general term for that.
And summer complaint? I love that it can refer to both an illness. So is a summer complaint sort of like a summer cold or something like that?
No, it's usually just an upset stomach because a kid ate too much fruit, or
okay,
maybe the potato salad was out in the sun too long, or they got into some bad water.
But it could also refer to annoying tourists.
Yes, particularly in Maine, where people are a little bit jealous of their privacy. Summer complaint is a tourist. And they're also in Maine called summer caters.
There are a couple more that deal with time and the seasons in an interesting way. Is a Norwegian summer, I think, is one?
Yeah, Norwegian summer is a mild winter.
That's what it refers. Well, even though we have plenty of Norwegians, I haven't heard that term here, but maybe it's been used here.
Well, maybe not enough people spend time in Norway these days.
And then summertime, as in two words, not one.
Yes, there are lots of expressions for standard time versus daylight savings time.
Yeah.
Some people call it fast time versus slow time, or summertime versus wintertime. So summertime is daylight savings.
Brian in Green Bay has something. Hi, Brian. Thanks for calling.
No problem. I've traveled all over the United States, Canada, Mexico,
mm-hmm.
and I happened to go to the Appalachians in Pennsylvania, and I've heard the term y'all.
Yeah.
But this one lady said Ewens. I've never heard Ewens before.
Yeah, like Ewens.
Yeah. We have lots of evidence for that, and West Virginia is certainly a place where that's common. Pennsylvania, that area on the central or mid-Atlantic coast, it comes from U-1s, but it's just been squished together to be U-1s.
Yeah.
And it's similar to y'all or you guys, both of which are regional.
Yeah, you guys would be, I mean, we hear that here. We wouldn't.
Yes.
I don't think U-1s, I've never heard it here in Wisconsin.
No, it would be unusual here.
Very unusual here. So there you go, Brian. Thanks for calling. John in Grays Lake, Illinois, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. So I've got a question about the thing you sit on, the piece of furniture you sit on in your living room.
Yeah.
So my wife always called it a couch, and I guess I occasionally call it a couch when I was growing up, but we always called it a Davenport in our house. Mm-hmm. That was in Minnesota, and my folks are from central Wisconsin, so I don't comment on that.
When I was a kid, my folks referred to it as the Davenport, too.
Yeah, that's a pretty widespread term. You find it less frequently in the South and the South Midland or clear up in the Northeast, but it's pretty widely scattered otherwise. There are other variants such as Davino, and on the West Coast, you get Chesterfield, which is a Canadian term, and goes down through the Pacific states.
So couch is
pretty common.
Common everywhere. But Davenport, I'm with you, John. We used it when I was a kid, too. Thanks for calling. Diane in Verona, hi to you.
Hi there. Well, I was, when I moved to Wisconsin, I heard, and this is only one person say this, but he said it all the time, and he would insert the word pack, P-A-C-K, for the word carry, such as in the sentence, you lost your screwdriver, well, did you pack it into the house in your back pocket?
I had
never heard that before.
Well, we actually have a very nice map for that, and it shows that pack, meaning to carry or lug or tote, is found chiefly in the West or in the Mississippi Valley or the Southern Appalachians.
So he may have been from one of those areas.
Well, I know he was from South Central Wisconsin, but I don't know. And I just remember another time when I was packing to go somewhere, and I had my suitcases sitting there, and he said, do you want me to pack those out to the car for you? God, you know, I already packed them. You don't need to.
Thanks, Diane.
I had one other one.
Okay, go ahead.
And that is the, this may be regional, too. I come from central Iowa. We always said I made a mistake. I did something by accident. Here I hear it, I did it on accident.
Yes, we do have some evidence for that. I don't remember whether it's distinctly regional or not. I suspect...
Well, to me, it's just wrong.
My guess is that this is an age-related term because I hear it more often among young people.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. So there you go.
Very interesting. All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Diane. And Naomi in River Falls. Hi.
Hi. Yeah, I just had a question. I've always lived in Wisconsin and Minnesota, and our family often would use the term not leaving until the last dog is hung, and that would be like the last people to leave.
Yeah. And I tell you what, we're going to ponder that. We'll take a quick look at the news. Weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Net, and then we'll be back and we'll let you know about not leaving till the last dog is hung. Stay with us. Language is fascinating, isn't it? There are really interesting regional differences in how we describe and explain the world around us, and language is evolving all the time as well. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The Dictionary of American Regional English is an incredible resource, and we can proudly claim it as a product of Wisconsin. Joan Hall, our guest, is the chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English. Always appreciate it when she spends time with us. Always a lot of fun. Thank you so much for being with us again, Joan.
Oh, well, thank you.
We had, as we were kind of breaking for news, a caller called in and wondering Where did the phrase, we're not leaving till the last dog is hung?
Yeah, well, we do have an entry for it. Mm-hmm. And although we didn't have very many people in the survey who gave that phrase, we do have quite a few written quotes. And it seems to be especially common in what we call the inland north, which means the north starting about upstate New York and going west to the west coast. So Wisconsin certainly fits
yes.
in that area. And it may go back to an English phrase, which we found in the Oxford English Dictionary, that says, give a dog an ill name and hang him. We're not sure that it's exactly the source, but they seem related.
Yeah, yes, they do. And that's interesting. So we're not leaving until the last dog is hung, and I've certainly heard that.
Yes.
More than once. Will in El Paso, Texas, what have you got for us today?
Well, I'm up here visiting.
Oh.
And I hear, I was in Minnesota here about a few weeks ago, and I hear the phrase, you betcha, a lot. And it's kind of a neat phrase, but I just wondered where it came from.
Well, it's absolutely Wisconsin and Minnesota, so it's interesting that you noticed that. It comes from the phrase, you bet you, as in you, or you bet your, as in you bet your life. Both of those phrases, you bet you and you bet your life, are found pretty widespread. But you betcha is very upper Midwest, and we have a map that shows it. And we're very proud of it. You betcha.
You betcha. Absolutely. There you go, Will.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. If you have a question or comment, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Maybe there's a phrase that you wonder about, or maybe you've got a question. I know Dare is, we were talking a little earlier, Dare is updating its research, and this is the original research was done 50 years ago. Now we're doing some, they are doing some online research, isn't it, Joan?
Yes. Uh-huh. We're not only trying to find out what happened to words we used 50 years ago, but we're also checking into new things that didn't even exist. So, for example, what do you call that cardboard thing you put around a hot cup of coffee so you don't burn your hand?
Oh, a sleeve.
A sleeve, a collar, a jacket, a wrap, or if you're from New York City, a zarf.
A zarf. I like that.
Yeah. It's an Arabic word.
Oh, okay. So, and obviously there's an opportunity there for anybody here in the state of Wisconsin to get involved in this. I think it'd be a lot of fun. I'm
yes,
frankly thinking of going myself. I haven't done it yet, but I'm thinking of going, and I won't be able to fill out the whole thing, but no one will, probably.
No,
but
we're happy to have people participate as much or as little as they'd like. We're particularly interested in going back to the 22 communities where we did research 50 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and those include Algoma, Antigo, Bayfield, Belmont, Burlington, Janesville, 22 communities. Mm. You can see the whole list on the DARE website, www.dare.wisc.edu. Click on the left where it says New Wisconsin Survey. And we're also interested in going to new communities chosen on the basis of the 2010 census. So in the original communities, we're hoping to find people who have lived there all their lives. But in the new communities, we're only asking that people have lived there for 15 years or more.
Okay.
So we're trying to find out whether it matters that people have moved around.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also looking over time. So in the same places, do lifelong residents use the same words that they would have 50 years ago? And we've discovered, for instance, that Schmier and Sheepshead and Shaskoff are still alive and well. It's wonderful to see that.
Well, now, you've got my interest up here. You mentioned four or five of those communities. Let's go through the rest of those communities.
Okay. The original ones are Algoma, Antigo, Bayfield, Belmont, Burlington, Florence, Janesville, Jefferson, Jim Falls, Juneau, La Crosse, Lancaster, Manitowoc, Menominee Falls, Nisida, New Berlin, Pepin, Portage, River Falls, Superior, Washington Island, and Wautoma.
Oh, okay. So if you're from one of those communities and you've been there a while, preferably, or maybe even your whole life.
Yes, we'd love to have you.
Love to have you, you participate. And then there's these new communities,
which are Argyle, Baraboo, Belgium, Boaz, Chippewa Falls, Delavan, Doylestown, Eldoran, Elm Grove, Genoa City, Horicon, Howard's Grove, Kewanee, Linden, Madison, Marinette, Menasha, Milwaukee, New Lisbon, Ogdensburg, Oshkosh, Pleasant Prairie, Plymouth, Randolph, Richfield, Richland Center, South Milwaukee, Spooner, Watertown, and Webster.
All right. Well, let's see. My father-in-law and mother-in-law are from Watertown, and they've been there pretty much their whole life. I'll have to get them. I'll have to get them doing it. Now, here's an interesting question for you. I'm living in Madison and have lived in Madison for quite a few years, but I actually, prior to that, I lived in Monona, which is connected essentially to is that
that's
would
legitimate.
That count?
Yes, would it that would. Yes.
All right. Well, then I'm part of the. I can be part of the new research.
That's right. And the important thing to remember is that this only will be available until September 30th. So
not a lot of time.
Hurry to your computers.
Get to the computers, and especially if all those towns that were mentioned. Man, if you're from one of those towns, take a look. I mean, even if you fill out one or two sections, that would be very
valuable.
Very, very valuable. Well, Don in West Salem, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi there.
And what have you got for us?
Well, I'm just curious. We were talking at Larry Fest this weekend, and they have a Bloody Mary bar there. So we were wondering where that phrase, hair of the dog that bit you, originated.
Well, I'm not exactly sure where it originated, but I do know that it's very widespread. And for that reason, we didn't include it. So I'm sorry I can't tell you.
Oh, hair of the dog. Yeah, a little hair of the dog. I've heard that phrase many a time. So we can't help you out there, Don. Thanks for calling. Sally in Middleton, it's your turn. Hi, Sally.
Hi, thanks so much. I love this kind of talk and information. You mentioned several earlier in this program. You mentioned, I think, three different words for, Davenport. We always say sofa. It's short, sweet, and it's easy, and you didn't mention sofa. Why not?
You're right. I didn't. I simply didn't think of it. It also is very widespread.
And you'll find that throughout the country, then?
I believe that's right.
Yeah? Okay. So there you go. Sofa. And you wonder, why? All right, sofa. It's kind of a comfortable-sounding word, isn't it? When
it
I think
is.
Of, you know, I hear sofa, and I think, okay, that's soft or comfortable. It comes to mind immediately.
Well, if you will give me 10 seconds, I will see whether we do indeed have it. Well, we do have an entry for it.
Oh.
But we don't show a map. And we included it not for its sense, but for its variant forms. So, for instance, some people call it Sophie, others call it Sophie, but most say sofa.
There we go. Thank you, Sally.
Thank you.
And Axel in Evansville. There's a good one.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, you bet.
I believe this one is going to fall into the widespread category now that I've been listening for a few minutes, but I'm a golfer. I've personally never used this term because I always hit the ball straight. where did the origin of four come from?
F-O-R-E. Four.
I think it's probably F-O-R-E. Yeah, yeah.
I wish I could tell you, but not being a golfer, and not having put it in dare, because you're right, it is very widespread. I'm sorry that I can't give you the etymology.
I wonder if that came from...
Well, that's okay. That's a curious question, though. Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. You know, somebody may even have some ideas or some thoughts. I wonder if it came from Scotland, where golf originated. Maybe.
I would think that if you looked in the Oxford English Dictionary, you'd probably find it.
I bet. That's worth a look. Rita in Wisconsin Rapids, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, well, thank you for taking my call. And as I was listening, the terms hassock versus footstool, I wonder, you know, we always used hassock, but a lot of people had never heard of that. But that isn't the reason I'm calling. I was calling about fuss budget. Like my husband's mother would call him fuss budget. We were just talking about this last night, so it's funny you guys are talking about this today. And then my sister, who's from Fond du Lac, she said, oh, well, our mother always said that too. So I just wondered where that term came from.
I've heard that term, or I heard it. I haven't heard it in a long time, but I heard that term years back. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we do show that it's a regional term found mostly in the North, the North Midland, and the West. And our etymology sends you to the word budget. And I don't happen to remember what sense that was. I think it was for, I don't remember if it was a child or not.
Hmm.
If you'll hold on a minute, I can find out.
We'll
love to.
Yeah. Well, hang in there, Rita. Joan Hall, our guest today, chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English. It's always so much fun when she comes by to talk about all of the wonderful regional words that sometimes create a little mystery for us.
Well, I've looked it up, and the budget that we refer to in fuss budget is a person who embodies traits especially of fussiness or fretfulness, and it's used often as the second element in compounds such as, we know, fuss budget, but also flutter budget, sputter budget, and tattle budget.
Ah! Not a one of which I've heard until just this very moment.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Rita, for calling. Oh, that's wonderful. Sandy in New Berlin, it's your turn. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, folks. I'm calling because this isn't about summer. It doesn't involve summer, but it has to do with summertime activities. I grew up in Racine, and we were going to, when we would grill food, it would be a barbecue.
Yeah.
Barbecue might not even be involved, but we were going to barbecue. When I married my husband from the Two Rivers, Manitowoc area, everything was a fry out. It didn't matter whether you were actually frying. I thought, well, we're still grilling, but it's known as a fry out in that region. And those people never really heard of barbecuing. So it's interesting that I hadn't heard of fry out and they hadn't heard of barbecuing when all we're really doing is grilling. So I'm wondering about that.
Well, our evidence shows that fry out is a very Wisconsin term. So your husband is right in league with his companions.
So he's more of a Wisconsinite than I am then.
Actually, this is one of the questions that we have added in our new survey because we neglected it the first time around. But when I came here, I heard grill out very often, but
yeah.
I never would have heard that in California or Idaho or Maine, where it was indeed a barbecue. So we'll be interested in finding out whether there are regional patterns for these.
Yeah. Cookout's another one.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Cookout. But I'd never heard of fry out till I hooked up with the Two Rivers crowd.
Thanks, Sandy. Appreciate the call. Well, she's still with that Two Rivers crowd, I guess. Dennis in Waupun, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I had a colorful uncle who used the term for anything that was difficult to lift, and he always said it was heavier than a dead priest. Have you ever heard that term?
Oh, that's a new one on me.
That is a new one on me,
that's
too.
That's great.
Heavier than a dead priest. Boy, you should, Dennis, you should get on the survey and put that in.
That was several other terms he used that I can't put on the radio.
There you go. Well, I have never heard that one. That may have been your uncle's only to him. Oh, David in Madison. Hi, thanks for calling.
Thank you. I taught German for a long time, and the word for, you know, when you hit a golf shot astray, F-O-R-E in English, comes from the German V, as in vowel, V-O-R, which means in front of. So the German word Vorsicht, V-O-R,
S-I-C-H-T means foresight, or in other words, look up in front of you. So in English and in the Scottish areas with the Gulf fanatics over there, the word for, F-O-R-E, became the English spelling of that word that in German was B-O-R, for, mean, which is a preposition meaning in front of. So that's where you get, if you hit a bad shot off the tee, you have to holler for, F-O-R-E, so that the people down the fairway or off to the side where you shouldn't have hit it will look up in front of them to see the ball coming erroneously their way.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. I do have a question, though, if I might, please.
Yeah.
Soda or pop or soda pop, where in the heck? I know in the South they say Coke for everything, but what about soda and pop or soda pop?
Well, soda in our data seemed to be most common in the Northeast and along the Mid-Atlantic coast and scattered elsewhere, whereas pop was in the Midwest and the West. Soda pop was kind of scattered all over. But I think that these are changing. It seems to me that soda is moving west.
Nah.
Whereas pop would have been the Madison term for decades. My son, who grew up here, is now saying soda.
So. Yeah, we had relatives from the Midwest who moved to upstate New York when I was a kid, and they came back a few summers later, and all of a sudden when we got a pop for grandma, they were calling it a soda.
Yeah.
I'm still a pop guy myself.
Yeah, me too.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it. And Carrie in Madison has one that my dad used to use. My dad used this saying more than once. Carrie, what have you got?
I actually heard this on TV recently, but it's a person is tougher than a boiled owl.
Yeah, tougher than a boiled owl. My dad used that term many times.
Yeah, we have that, but we also have drunk as a boiled owl or to feel like a boiled owl, meaning to be exhausted or physically uncomfortable or especially hungover.
My dad used it in terms of, let's say if you had a steak or something that was you could hardly chew, he would say it's tougher than a boiled owl.
Yeah, we've got evidence for that. Both of our quotes are from Maine. Your dad wasn't from Maine, was he?
No, he wasn't. Matt, he was a Wisconsin guy through and through. So Maine is where it got its start.
Well, those are our earliest quotes.
Okay. There you go, Carrie. Thanks for calling. Marlene in Watertown. Hi, Marlene. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. I have a question. Why is it nowadays I hear the term continuing on all the time? Why isn't continuing enough? We don't continue backwards. Obviously, continuing on is just redundant.
Well, we have lots of phrases like this. Think of all the phrases that end in up. I'm going to finish up. I'm going to... Well, I can't think of others right away, but up seems to add a sense of doing it to completion.
Yeah.
Some people may feel that on gives this sense of forward motion.
Dry up.
I don't know that there's any logic to it, but I think that that's what's happening.
I think you're right. There you go, Marlene. And Jeff in Green Bay. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for calling.
Hey, how you doing? Great show. I just wondered... being my wife is an immigrant from a Spanish-speaking country, what kinds of influences you've seen from the Spanish language in English around the country? You have the obvious words like rodeo and things like that, but I was kind of wondering what influences you might have seen in the Hispanic or Spanish language nature in different parts of the country.
Well, most of the Spanish words cluster in the West, which is not surprising. A lot of them have to do with physical features like arroyos. Others have to do with cowboy activities. Others have to do with foods. And as won't surprise you, food words like taco and enchilada and burrito and all these things that are widespread now were 50 years ago almost solely restricted to the West. So we have a great map showing that enchilada was found only in the Southwest, But what happens when a commercial chain picks up the food and spreads all over the United States? Pretty soon those words are used everywhere.
And there's the whole enchilada.
Yes, or the big enchilada.
The big enchilada as well. Oh, this is so much fun. Joan, again, I want to go back to the project that you've got. You want to get people going to your website to fill out the questionnaire, which should be actually a lot of fun.
I think it is.
I'm going to do it. So.
And people who fill out at least one section, when they leave the survey, will be asked if they'd like to be part of a telephone interview, because mm-hmm. we're also interested in how pronunciation has changed over 50 years. So both of these are options, and I hope people will try it out.
I hope so, too. So they should go to your website, right?
The easiest way is to go to www.dare.wisc.edu and click on the left-hand side where it says New Wisconsin Survey.
And we have a link to that on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show as well. And that would be an easy way to do it. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Click on Dare, and there you are. Joan, thank you so much. Look forward to another visit.
Well, thank you.
Joan Hall has been our guest, the chief editor of the Dictionary of American Regional English. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.